Love Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Saturday, September 18th, 2010, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. Last Tuesday, Lavendar brought a major story out of the vault called Crack Between the Worlds. We had live callers who had been moved to tears and a flood of email thanking her for sharing the story of ET revelation. Because of the importance of this episode, Lavendar will tell it again today for the number of people who have expressed an interest and couldn't join us live before. The chat room will be closed today to avoid distraction. After the story, we welcome your comments or questions, and please be mindful of others who will also be waiting with questions. The call-in number is 917-889-8292. That's 917-889-8292. And press 1 if you have something to say. Otherwise, we'll think you're just listening. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. Before I introduce Lavendar, I'd like to mention that if you register for free here at blogtalkradio.com and click the little red heart on our podcast player or the word follow, you'll get an email notice when our next show is coming in case we don't know you yet. All of our past shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. If you're new to our show, you've missed a lot of chapters, but they're still available for you to catch up. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of fascinating and necessary information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, like Lavendar's discovery of star markings, solar returns, your 10 hours of power, and the Teton reports. It's like a free internet classroom library for Starseed. We also have an archive of past teleconferences you can hear on our headline news page. Just click the scrolling banner on the main page, and then it'll take you to the headline news page. And once you're there, near the bottom of the page, you can also find the video slideshow where Lavendar tells the details about her discovery of star markings and the Pleiadian lineup where she spent 2 days in the Great Pyramid with the Pleiadian ship overhead conducting a giant walk-in procedure. Believe me, it's a spellbinding story. You can see the pictures on our main site. Just go down the list of links on the left of any page and click Magical Moments Caught on Film. We also have a support forum at starseedhotline.ning.com. That's starseedhotline.ning.com. I'll be introducing Lavendar in just a moment, but first, I'd also like to mention that she has written 2 books for Starseed, which are now available as e-books on our site. The first one, 50 Questions and Answers, is a transmission from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station, where she had the opportunity to ask 50 profound questions and be answered clearly and truthfully by Silovan, an ascended guardian of this galaxy. The second e-book, Quartz Crystals, A Celestial Point of View, is a comprehensive guide for the starseed use of crystals, including solar star dates for the next 10 years for charging crystals with galactic frequency. These books are a must-read for starseed to understand the galactic big picture and your part in it. If you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. If you'd like to learn about the new device that disables unsupportive implants, relieves pain, and resets your energy, call our toll-free number or email lavendar@starseedhotline.com. And please spell her name correctly. It's L-A-V-A-N-D-A-R. Otherwise, it won't get to her. lavendar@starseedhotline.com. And now it's time to introduce Lavendar with a few comments before she tells her remarkable story, The Crack Between the Worlds. Lavendar, are you with us now?
Thank you, Ariel. Okay. I just want to thank everyone for the response that I received by email from lots of different people. And I just want to mention that on several emails they talked about some people got dizzy at the time when I was talking about having the encounter underneath Giant Rock. Some people experienced missing time. Others were brought to tears. So we would like to know about any thing that happened to you while you were listening to it last week, and after you listened to it this week, we'd also like to hear comments. So just make note of that. I want to mention that today Jupiter and Uranus are conjunct exact in the sky, and this won't happen again for 12 years. And so this is a really great time for expansion and unlimited vision, and people will really feel optimistic and really up in their DNA, and their star crystals in their blood are going to start snapping today. So it's a really good day for starseed. Also, I'd like to mention a little high strangeness that happened here a few days ago. I have a calico cat. She's like 11 years old, and she doesn't walk very fast, and she has found a place across the street to hide during the day, and I go out and call her. And, you know, she comes and she walks very slow. But I had the experience of watching her come out of her hidden place, and then she somehow, it was a jump three times, like she was apported three times before she hit the porch on the front door. And it's like, what? I was watching this going, oh, goodness, this is really something. And since then, she's not a old cat anymore. She runs around. She's feeling great. I don't really know what happened to Callie, but it came from, I think, crack between the worlds. And about the same time, within the next few hours, a little four-week-old kitten started screaming across the street underneath a house, and I was able to go get it, and it has a voice like a grown cat, you know, not like a little cat. It kind of made me think of that, you know, that opera singer, that little 10-year-old Jackie Evancho, you know, with that big voice. So all of that happened in this past week, and I just wanted to share it with the listeners. So
Let me have you clarify. I know what you mean, but the word apported, some people have never heard that before. That is where the cat would dematerialize from one place and then rematerialize in another place.
Three times.
It's like being beamed up and beamed back.
Well, just jumped. It was just quickly. Yeah, I don't have.
So she jumped from one location and then she appeared in the next location without physically having to walk there. Is what
right.
You're saying? It happened three times right in front of you. Okay.
Right.
I just wanted to be clear about that because I mean I knew what you meant, but
okay.
Some people don't know about apportation yet. So, yeah. And so Callie's feeling really good these days.
Really is.
I'm glad to hear that.
So I just wanted to mention that. Anyway, okay, what you're about to hear is the first chapter of Crack Between the Worlds, which, of course, has been in the bank vault for many years, and here it is.
On March 4th, 2000, I discovered on the sightings.com webpage a story about an event that shook my soul to its foundation. Giant Rock, a huge boulder sitting in the area of Landers, California, had suddenly split open, exposing a gleaming white granite interior. Giant Rock had long been a sacred site for UFO researchers along with Native American lore. The description of the splitting of the rock is presented in an article by James Twyman, author of Emissary of Light and Secret of the Beloved Disciple. His website, www.jamestwyman.com, and a news article can be found from the High Desert Star newspaper dated Wednesday, February 23rd, 2000. So why did the news of the splitting of Giant Rock have such an effect on me? Because I've been holding a series of stories for several years concerning light information from ETs that are influencing our planet. Somehow, I've been given the insight to journal some events that started to take place at Giant Rock, starting back in 1976. These events were witnessed by several people. Some are still living, while others have crossed over. As I looked at the before and after pictures of Giant Rock, I knew that I would need to print it out and look at it many times over the next few days. Seeing the two pictures of Giant Rock, the before picture I knew so well, and the after picture, well, startling. It was a shock to my system. I knew that it was a signal to me. Seeing the cracked rock created in my being a release of light information that I'd been holding for over 25 years. It seemed that every file in my brain's computer wanted to download, and I kept saying, oh no, not now, it isn't I can't do this now. I instantly knew that I had to put up my, like my visible hands to my head as though I could stop this. And I kept chanting, no, 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 as though I had any power over memories of this magnitude. It was at that moment that I felt an outside presence enter the room and a calming came over me. This presence was not visible, and yet I was aware that it was there. The struggle with the filing system in my head seemed to be closed off, and all at once I knew that within 24 hours I'd be released to write this story. Sacred time and space would be provided for me, and I'd simply sit down properly and release to the keyboard of my computer what I could remember or what I'd be allowed to remember. For days now, it seemed that information about Giant Rock was about to surface. The day the rocks actually split was on a Monday, February 21st, 2000. My mother made a statement to me that certainly got my attention. At that time of the writing of this, my mother was 85 years old and in a wheelchair. I had taken some of her artwork out and noticed that she had about 18 canvases that were unfinished and not signed. I asked her if she'd sign the pictures, as I felt that her signature should be on them, and she replied that she would not sign a picture until it was finished. I promised her that if I could take art lessons and learn some of her techniques, that perhaps I could finish some of her paintings. She agreed and proceeded to tell me about each picture and what was needed to finish it. When I came to a painting that was of the sand dunes and mysterious blue and pink sky, I blurted out, oh, this can be the picture of me at Giant Rock with George Van Tassel. My mother squinted her eyes with that little leprechaun look and said, yes, and you haven't finished doing what you said you'd do. And I said, well, I think I've done about 25%. And she said, well, when are you going to do the rest of the story? And I said, well, I don't know. The thing that amazed me about her statement was that I couldn't remember telling her anything about my promise to George Van Tassel. I looked at the painting of the sand dunes and I could see, just as though it were yesterday, George walking toward the dunes and me walking back to the house where he lived. I also remembered that it was the last time that we had a three-hour one-to-one talk. In fact, I can now say with certainty it was the last time I saw the true essence of George Van Tassel, period. The vision of me walking towards the house and not looking back seemed to freeze frame in my brain. All at once I said, Mother, I know what I will paint. A man walking in one direction and a woman walking towards us. She said, you'll never, and I mean never, learn to paint people. And with that, she just totally dismissed the painting, and a mother and daughter shutdown happened with me. It occurred right there, right then. You know, the kind of electromagnetic psychic pulses that happen with certain genie bloodlines. And my mother was a genie, and she was certainly out of her bottle. I took the canvas down on the floor, and as I placed it, a series of pictures started flashing in my head. They were of the day that George took me for the walk and gave me information about ETs, walk-ins, mind control, ET government experiments, advanced technology, and just straight spiritual insight. He clearly defined his ET source, and from his perspective, clues of their experiments. He turned to me, and his gentle voice said, you know, one day you'll need to release this light information to the world, And you'll know the right time because the signal will come when giant rock cracks. And this will signify a communication line that represents the crack between the worlds. When this happens, then that'll be your signal to release your light information, but with a lot of discernment. I asked him what he meant by when giant rock cracks, and he went into a great explanation about this information concerning the crack between the worlds, and said that as a demonstration and in unison with all the dimensions there, there'd be lightning from the sky, and the boulder would just simply crack open. He said it wouldn't happen for a long time, and that I shouldn't concern myself with it now, but that I was only to remember it when giant rock would crack. He said that I would write it down and pass it on to the next 7 generations of people to come. And I asked him, well, why so long a time? And he said, well, the light information that I'm going to give to you will not be understood by many until then. And there'll be those that will relate to this, and it is for them that you must pass this light information on. As we walked through the sand dunes, he related information about time travel and rejuvenation and ET technology and walk-ins and dimensional interconnectedness that occurred with certain codings and timings. He was able to transfer this light information in 3 hours, but it would take me 25 years to live it, decode it, and then translate it into story form. At the time, I was 33 years old and just starting on my spiritual journey into something that I have referred to as Beyond Sea. Through these years, I've come to know and understand some of the information that George gave me that day. Some I have already written about, while others' aspects have been experienced but not yet journaled. Now that the rock has cracked open, it seems to signal to me that perhaps it is time to release the information about the stories of Giant Rock, George and Doris Van Tassel, and the visitations of the ETs. I could hear him saying this as clearly as though it were yesterday, and I said to myself, not now, this is not the right time, and I pushed away the memories and pushed my mother in the wheelchair out of the room. As part of this coordinated coincidence, a few days later, I received a phone call from Ariel telling me that she'd been in contact with a man who'd been to Giant Rock and had many visits with Doris Van Tassel, George's second wife. I thought this seemed odd, especially after my recent experience with my mother and the sand dunes painting. As Ariel talked, I started flashing in on a series of events that had taken place at Giant Rock, and once again I said, oh, not now, this isn't the time, as I continued to push even further back my memories as they were coming to a place that I call crack between the worlds. It was all that I could do just to listen to her, explaining her relationship with her new friend. I was experiencing a series of flashing pictures and trying to listen to her at the same time. Pretty soon, I had to turn my screen off and just go blank. Sometimes, this is the only way that I can hold my sanity together. I was on automatic pilot now and knew it. I also knew that something was approaching from the crack between the worlds. The next time, I didn't know if I could stop the visions with a simple blank screen. And through the years, I've learned the cadence and the deliverance system from the otherwhere. And it seems as though they use this 1, 2, 3 punch system just before they knock me out with sacred data or before they release me to download information. I've never been able to discern whether it's incoming or outgoing or both. Being dyslexic like I am, I guess it doesn't matter. Before I talk about my walk with George in the sand dunes, I should mention what happened to me on February 7, 1977. It all started with my romantic fling with a young man from Alaska who owned a helicopter company. I was truly smitten, and his sexual, physical prowess kept my head spinning. On New Year's Eve, we were drinking Jack Daniels and really partying on the Strip in Vegas. At the moment of midnight, he took me in his helicopter and we buzzed the Strip and flew back to the airport. How we escaped the police and death is beyond me. He went home with me that night and moved into my apartment. The next day I discovered that my favorite wristwatch with tiny diamonds was missing. My father had given me this wristwatch for my high school graduation, and it was very, very special to me. I retraced my steps and toured every casino, but to no avail. I was simply devastated and felt a part of me was truly missing. We spent all of January in romantic bliss, until one night while dancing at the Mount Charleston Lodge, I became overwhelmed with a strong feeling that he was going to leave me for my best friend Diana. It was so strong that I fled the dance floor and immediately went home. He tried to convince me that this would never happen, that he truly detested Diana. The next day I tried to shake this vision, but I couldn't. He brought me flowers, we had a romantic dinner, then went downtown to see a movie. When we got home, I had such a foreboding that I sat down with a bottle of Jack Daniels and drank most of it. When I went into the bedroom, I heard a voice tell me to look at him sleeping and remember it would be the last time he would spend the night there. I was drunk and thought I was hearing things, but I remembered it. The next morning, a voice started speaking inside my head again, saying things like, "Watch him get dressed, watch him eat breakfast, now watch him walk out the door, for he will not be back. You will not ever, and I mean ever, see him again." I heard this, but didn't want to believe it. Sure enough, that night, Diana called me to tell me he was over at her house. They stayed in bed for 2 weeks, and then they got married. He never came back for his clothes, and I never saw him again. He vanished out of my life. I was out of my mind with grief. I canceled all my appointments and wouldn't leave my apartment until I received a phone call from Doris Van Tassel from Giant Rock on February 7, 1977. She asked me if I would come immediately to see her. She said it was urgent. I had a girlfriend named Sally that had her own airplane, so she flew me down there. And there was a landing strip at Giant Rock, because it used to be an airport. When I got out of the plane, there was Doris, thin, petite, white pixie hair with arms waiting to greet me. As she hugged me, I felt a sense of release from my heartbreak, almost like it fading from my mind. She grabbed Sally and said, "You know, Lavendar needs to be left alone so that she can sit inside the room below Giant Rock by herself. She needs, you know, clarity." And with that, they both drove off to the house, which was about a mile away. I was stunned, and yet I obeyed and went down the stairs to the room under the rock. This room had only one door in or out. I was there several minutes. When I started to climb the stairs to leave, I heard a voice behind me. When I turned around, there was this dark-haired man who was bald on top. He looked like he had put on a really, really bad hairpiece because the hair didn't look real. I noticed that his skin had no pores, and he looked bronze, like someone had just chiseled him out of a statue. His face, well, he was quite handsome. He reminded me, you know, of a cross between actors John Saxon and John Gavin. He was taller than me, and yet I felt the same size when in his presence. His eyes, well, what can I say? It wouldn't make any sense. They were gold, and then blue, then green, then black, then rainbow colors that aren't even in our spectrum. How do you describe a color with no reference point? Startled, I said, "Who are you, and what do you want of me?" The next thing that happened was so freaky that it blanked my mind where I couldn't hear any words come from him. All I remember was that he motioned for me to open my hand, and I did. I looked down into my hand, and there was my lost wristwatch. As he closed my hand and held it, he filled me with so much light that my five senses went into a blur. I couldn't see, hear, or smell. I was just totally overwhelmed. I can't even tell if I shut my eyes or not. The only thing I remember after that was he telepathically told me that I would not be able to convey to anyone about this transfer of light information until I had experienced it by living it. He told me, "You are the demonstration and experiment of light information And because of this, many adventures will be forthcoming. And you're to journal them. Hold them in sacred space until such a time as light information demonstrations will be embraced by those of like mind. If you try to tell anyone of this before the time, they'll be erased with this knowledge and not be able to keep it, nor tell anyone ever about it, because you're going to be alone with this. But there will be those of us that will come throughout your life to present different levels of light information that opens doors of other realities, other dimensions, and you will have direct contact with those of us of extraterrestrial heritage, which is not of Earth. You'll be loaned out to different species for short durations in order to journal their evolutionary contributions to Earth. And during this time, you'll be closely monitored through your double pineal and by crystal implants that we will give you. Through this series of adventures, you will go beyond the limb. This will be a turning point. Then terms of endearment. And you'll remember these phrases as they'll become codes that will be released with some of these adventures. These were the names of movies of an actress that I would empower later. Then he placed his hands on my head, and I saw pictures of different vistas of trees and limbs, an environmental structure, and around these trees were images of people who looked like me, dark hair, blue eyes. I saw movie stars. First there was Natalie Wood, then Elizabeth Taylor. In the distance were Joan Collins, Barbara Parkin, Susan St. James, Susan Plachette, Elizabeth Ashley. The authors, Jacqueline Suzanne and Ayn Rand. Then off to one side I saw male figures that were also famous. Burt Reynolds, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, and Dennis Weaver, all of whom I met and had interaction with in this lifetime, some more than others. Then I saw Ronald Reagan, Anwar Sadat, Gorbachev, Jerry Brown, Donald Trump, and then a stream of faces I could not identify, of which some of them showed up in my life in the next 25 years. Then I seemed to be going back in time, and I saw all the founding fathers of America, and I knew them all by name. Then the scene changed, and I saw a map with the names Athens, Greece, Cairo, Egypt, Israel, island of Aruba, Yucatan, Hawaii and Kauai, Sedona, Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Rio Dilson, New Mexico, Washington, D.C., and two faces that I didn't know at that time. I saw me on several occasions at the White House, surrounded by people that I would come to know later, congressional and Senate members and presidential hopefuls became a collage of characters parading through my life. It became obvious to me that ETs were intertwined in the political arena. Then I saw a group of fast-moving slides of the globe, then a map of 33 places around the globe. He took his finger and pointed to every one of them, and then he'd press on my forehead after each touch of the map. He said that I was to refer to these as the 33 gem PowerPoints of the crystal grid system. It would be from here that evolutionary planning would take place and would be monitored throughout the ages, as it has been designed that way from the beginning of the planet's history. I witnessed the activation of crystal ley lines and grid points by crystalline ET computers that were buried under the ground. A lot of guardians were also at these sites. The indigenous tribes at each location found a bloodline that was worthy of stewardship. This was usually passed down through seven generations in interlocking with other bloodline experiments that would sometimes be interchanged with 14-generation experiments. So much of this information is still surfacing from my memory banks and is released a little at a time, depending on who needs to know it kind of thing. Pictures were flashing so fast that I could remember only a small percentage of the information. I was shown how astrology and astronomy work together, and a galactic system based on the 12 time zone system, with certain degrees indicating specific galactic codes used by different species. It was through these pictures that the discovery of star markings was introduced to my filing system, but wouldn't surface for many years. Bloodlines were a big part of this information, as I saw an entire genetic system that is tracked by ETs through blood, plus planetary timing based on certain planetary equations. It would be from here that he said that I could excel in matters of galactic proportions, because this would reveal how ET species help to evolve a planet, both negatively and positively. After this series of movies, then he imparted a brief statement that I didn't understand for many, many years to come. He silently imprinted a phrase, "You are and have always been the light information. You now, come later, but you're coming with the adventure suited for a scribe. You must live this first, and we'll be on the standby every day of your counting. But remember, you belong to no man. You belong to us." Then he embraced me, had me breathe with him, and seemed to walk straight through me, and vanished. I looked down at my wristwatch, and it was running backwards, and that is when I totally collapsed. When I woke up, I was resting on the stairs. I felt like I must be having a nervous breakdown. I thought, I have to give up drinking Jack Daniels. It's causing my mind to go crazy. Then I realized that Doris had called me down to Giant Rock for this experience. How else could I explain the wristwatch in my hand, which had now started running forward, but was off by 2 hours? Over the years, I've tried to play this out in my mind and attempt to remember the rest of what he showed me. I've only been able to pull out bits and pieces of it. However, as my life would take different turns, I would see his face, and somehow I knew that he had foreseen or maybe even directed each adventure. Doris came to get me and take me back to the house for body treatment and dinner. Then Sally and I flew back to Las Vegas in her twin cub airplane. I was changed somehow, for the ache in my heart was gone, and I no longer could remember his name. Yeah, what was his name? I still don't have it. This would be the first of many romantic erasures to come in my life. Whenever I would venture off my soul mission with a man, the man would be just erased. I mean erased. I had no memory of what he looked or felt like, only a shadow memory that he'd even been part of my life. It takes a certain kind of male energy to even be in my presence, let alone in my everyday life. Not many can handle the galactic pressures that accompany my experiment on the planet. I used to explain it this way, because later in life I was struck 3 times by lightning and I attributed to that. But after the Giant Rock experience, well, I knew that ET technology was at work, and somehow it kept my little feet on the path of my future galactic experiences. So here is the story about my walk with George Van Tassel at the sand dunes at Giant Rock. This particular event happened about a month before George passed away. George and his wife Doris had called me to come visit them on this particular weekend. They had invited a select group of people to come and view some important documents that had been put in their care, and these documents were called the Wadi Scrolls. These were scrolls that were found in the Qumran Caves, close to where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. A man named Wadi had found them and had taken them to Stanford University, where they had been scrutinized and authenticated for 7 years. The Van Tassels felt that they wanted witnesses for the reading of this material, and they asked me, Harvey Bevere, and a Jewish couple, the man's name was Reuben, can't remember her name, to bear witness to the reading of these scrolls. They'd also expressed to us that they felt that our abilities to track and discern would help them in deciding the fate of these important documents. A man named Leo had recently had a stroke and had given these scrolls to George because he felt that he wouldn't live much longer. George, in turn, entrusted this information to the four of us, and we took turns reading this material, which had been carbon dated, as being written during the time of Jesus the Christ. There were letters from Claudius, Pontius Pilate, Nicodemus, both Marys, and several biblical characters. The translation from the Essenes to English was written by several professors at Stanford University, and we started reading the scrolls in the afternoon and read late into the night. Each of us took turns reading out loud. We would take breaks and discuss what we had read, but mostly we'd end up crying because of the depth of the material. The emotions that this brought up in us was overwhelming. The Jewish couple gave their viewpoint based on their religion. We needed to see through their eyes on how their ancestors would view this particular point of history. By 2 a.m., I suggested that we stop reading and try to get some sleep. Oh, what a joke that was. We all went to our bedrooms, but who could sleep? We just read material that could change the course of religious history. What would happen if this material was released and if people would be allowed to believe it? We were too stun-gunned to sleep. All of us lay looking at the ceiling for hours. Around 4 a.m., a bright blue light flooded all of our rooms as though we needed anything else to deal with. We were frozen in time, but for about 2 hours. In truth, we probably experienced some missing time. At about 6 a.m., when I could move my body, I decided we all needed some breakfast. I went into, overdrive and cooked bacon and sausage and eggs and pancakes and biscuits and potatoes and corn on the cob with plenty of coffee. This was the outlet that I needed at the moment to cook my fool head off. Around 7:30 a.m., we gathered again to eat this feast prepared from the Twilight Zone and started discussing what we had read the day and night before. Just as we were finishing breakfast, there was a knock on the door. There was a woman with a man in a wheelchair. It was Leo, the man that had given George the Wadi Scrolls. He said that he had been awakened in the middle of the night and was told by a voice to get up, get dressed, and drive to Giant Rock to see George immediately because something of importance was happening. He said the voice was so persuasive that he actually was without pain when he went to dress and was free of it as he spoke. I remembered Harvey Bevere kneeling down to speak to Leo, and after a few moments noticed that they both were in tears discussing the Wadi Scrolls. It was a very touching moment, and one that I am not going to forget for a very long time. We all sat around the round table and started reading the scrolls out loud again, except Leo, who only listened as his stroke had taken his speech. We had done about an hour of reading when there was a knock on the door. I got up and answered it, and there, standing tall, was a young Australian man speaking with an Aussie accent. Hi, my name is Donovan Joyce, and I have written a book called The Jesus Scrolls. I know this seems odd, but I was told by my guides to get on an airplane and fly from Australia to Los Angeles, then rent a car and drive to the desert past Palm Springs to a place called Giant Rock, and once I got here, I would know what to do. I glanced down by the door, and on a table was a copy of his book, The Jesus Scrolls by Donovan Joyce. Someone had sent it to Doris just a few days earlier and she hadn't had time to pick it up, much less read it. With not a skip of the beat, I immediately invited him in, introduced him to the group, and of course, we all had another round of tears. It was starting to be apparent that, you know, the force was at work, and that two individuals had been instructed by a voice to come to where we were, sitting in a double-wide house trailer, reading from A, manuscript given by Leo, who now had joined us, and B, another author with some very similar information, being driven by voice to come to the desert by way of Australia. What? Does this sound like the Twilight Zone? Yes, because it was. It was a perfect demonstration of when information flows from the crack between the worlds. We finished reading the first chapter around 2 p.m. It was at that point that George closed the manuscript, looked deep within our eyes, and said the following. Lavendar, Harvey, he mentioned the Jewish couple's names. He said, I called you here because I trust you. Not only do I trust you, but also I trust your soul and your records. I want you to tell me the truth about what I should do with this manuscript. Don't hold anything back. Just tell me how it is. He turned to me and said, well, Miss Bow and Era, let me hear it from you first. At first, I was shocked that he called on me, but then I just kind of settled into the fact, and without hesitation, I just blurted it out. George, if you try to publish this now, they'll kill you. The Catholic Church alone will have hitmen ready to take you out. You know, anyone that threatens their hold on power and influence of the church, and this isn't just the Catholic Church, not to mention the Baptists, the Methodists, the Church of Christ, and other religions and what they'll do. You know, all of Christianity is based on the fact that Jesus died for their sins, and guilt over this is used by every religion in order to control the people. The release of this manuscript would jeopardize too many people and too much power. My vote is to put it away in a vault under strict instructions not to be released until the world can handle, through consciousness, such a statement of fact. I spoke with a clarity that even surprised me, although when I think about it now, some years later, it was and is very clear why this manuscript or other manuscripts like it would either be destroyed or kept under lock and key and away from the masses. Now, can you imagine how I must have felt being raised a Baptist reading this manuscript? This went against everything I ever had been taught about the Bible or religion. Although I was studying astrology and was practicing the art of being a mystic, I still had certain beliefs that would, you know, they'd want to stay in place. The reading of this manuscript changed all that. And I have never, and I can say never, been the same since I read this material. George went around the table and heard from everyone what they also thought, and it was decided by a group that this material would be put in the vault. Later, it was established that when George and Doris died, that the material would go to me, and that I would be responsible for its safekeeping during my lifetime. This decision would change the course of my life, because the magnitude of the responsibility would require that I probably wouldn't marry and have earth children, because I could not put them in such a position. Their lives would never be safe. Every relationship that I would have would go through such a scrutiny. This is what I have learned through these years of silence. When one takes a cosmic oath of this magnitude, then a safeguard system is set up through a system called the Keeper of the Keys. Several keys are to be given, but only one is designed to be the one to release the information at the appointed time. That time would be determined by those aboard the Star of Bethlehem and by the 33 species of galactic intent. Computer readouts would determine this, and those readouts would take place through implants of the people and the planet. It was a gigantic screening procedure through certain readout days. Mostly these days would be called the Pleiadian lineup, which would match November 17, 18, 19, or May 17, 18, 19 of any given year. However, because of the escalation of technology and war on the planet, there has been additional days of monitoring. These may start as soon as November 15th or May 15th and last as long as several days after the 19th day. On the Pleiades, this is called the celebration of the planet Earth because we are their children and they want to know how we're doing and evolving. Kind of think of it as their Super Bowl with everyone around a TV set watching while partaking of their favorite beverage. This has been a tradition for thousands of years, especially since the destruction of Atlantis. The seeding, the watering, the fertilizing, and harvesting of a planet and its people have been ongoing from planet to planet through these evolutionary measures for eons of time. Sometime in late afternoon, George asked me if I would take a walk with him. He said that there were some things that he needed to discuss with me in private. I agreed and put on my walking shoes and hat, and we began our climb over the sand dunes on our way to Giant Rock. In about 10 minutes, when we went out of view of the house, George started speaking to me in a very strange voice. I'd never heard this voice before, but it was one that I knew spoke with great authority, so I listened very intently. He told me that he and other beings, ETs, and spirit world beings had been watching me for years and had been part of a team to prepare me for some extensive work that'd be forthcoming in the next 25 years. He said that I had been part of an ET experiment from the moment of my birth and that I was coded in my blood cells. He knew that I was born with a double pineal and I'd been part of a hybrid experiment and that I'd be exposed to other world realities so that I could journal them. He said I was coded in my blood and that these codes would be released upon certain timings and that I'd be monitored day and night for the rest of my life on the planet Earth. He explained to me about ET technology and implants, but more than that, he explained about time travel and what that would mean in the future when people understood the reality of going forward and backwards in time. Another topic was walk-ins and how that particular experiment was allowed with humans and the beings that'd be in charge of such soul interchange. Remember, this was in 1977. No one had even mentioned walk-ins at this point, not even Ruth Montgomery or anyone. This was brand new information, and you know, it was really hard for me to hear. When he would see that I would have difficulty in absorbing this information, he would take his hands and put them over my eyes as though he was coding me with his hands. Then he'd look at me in the eyes and stare for long periods to see whether it took or not. This went on for some time with each subject matter that he would tell me about. When he saw that I couldn't handle any more information, then he'd just walk in silence until I would speak. I ask a lot of questions and receive more than enough answers. This went on for about 3 hours. When it came time for closure, he instructed me to take his hands, look into his eyes, and with a jolt that I will never forget, charged me up with so much light that I thought I would explode. He told me to go back to the house and wait for him, that he needed to be alone. He turned and walked toward Giant Rock, and I practically floated back to the house. When I returned, everyone was still talking about the manuscript, but I was totally focused on the information that had just been given to me. I could tell that I had to sit alone with this, so I excused myself and went to the bedroom to rest. Several hours passed and Doris came in and asked, "Well, where's George?" I told her that he said that he needed to be alone. She informed me that it was now 10 p.m. and that I'd been back since dusk. I must have looked bewildered as though time had escaped me somehow. Everyone seemed to start being anxious about George, and a search party was convened to go out and find him. They looked for 2 hours, but no George. Finally, when everyone was exhausted from looking, a very calm, peaceful George just walked up to the house and came in the door. A curious thing happened after that. He turned and winked at me and did the following. He went around and touched everyone and talked with them, and in seconds, their entire perception of his absence was erased. I was the only one who was allowed to see this. This was part of my training, and I knew it. Another thing finally came over me. The George that left with me was not the George that came back. In other words, he told me the procedures of walk-ins and how they happen, and now he was one. It was the final demonstration. This was a secret that I would have to keep for some time. In about a month, I got a call from Doris telling me to come at once, that George had just died of a heart attack in a motel. I was in Santa Monica at the time, so it was about 3 hours until I could get there. Doris told me that when his spirit left his body, that the light bulb exploded and the table was split in half with a blue, bright light around it. This didn't surprise me. What did surprise me was when she confided in me that she felt like that she'd been living with the same person ever since, that she had not been living with the same person ever since he came back from his walk that day. She too had experienced another being in his body, and she told me that this being that left was only sent for a short period of time. She wanted me to record this, as she felt that I would know what to do with this material later. I took care of all the funeral arrangements for Doris, as she was in such a state that she could not think for herself with clarity. I don't remember much about this, as I was still processing the fact that George had left the day that we had taken the walk, not the person we were memorializing now. You know, it's been 23 years since that eventful walk with George Van Tassel, and I can truly say that if I had to mark a place in my life where I took a 180-degree turn, it'd be that walk in the sand dunes after reading the Wadi Scrolls. Now, when I wrote this, it was 23 years, so it's been longer than that now. On July 1, 1991, Doris Van Tassel died. I received a phone call telling me that Doris had sold the pages of the manuscript for $10,000 a page. She had distributed them around the world to different people and had made it almost impossible to retrieve. This is the information I was told in 1991. I was devastated to hear this, as every decision I made was readying myself for the responsibility of this manuscript. I felt betrayed. I felt alone. My life went pretty much on hold after that, and not until the crack in the boulder at Giant Rock did I feel the need to write this down on paper. But something about the way that George told me that the rock would crack one day seemed to be the code or signal for me to finally release some of this information. Last year, in 1999, I went to visit someone who had been healed at Giant Rock by ETs. I hadn't seen or heard from her in 20 years. She had recently published a book about the Van Tassel's work and had reprinted a lot of George's former writings. And one night, just before we were to retire, she brought a manuscript into my room, and there sat a copy of the Wadi Scrolls. I was so stunned, I couldn't open them. They stayed unopened by me the entire stay. I had kept my part of the bargain and been betrayed. Now they were back, and I wasn't. I knew that if I picked the manuscript up, that I could never put it down, so I never did. Everyone was dead now. Harvey, Doris, the Jewish couple, Leo, all except me. No, thank you. I got the message, and it's still the same message that I gave Doris when he asked me what he should do with the manuscript. The world is still not ready, nor would it be ready for some time to come. Now, here's the rest of the story that emerged in 2005. On my way to San Diego to catch a cruise ship for Spiritual Cinema Circle, I stopped by to see this woman again, as I was now reconsidering looking at the scrolls. Maybe I'd been too hasty with my decision. Perhaps now I could maintain a more balanced degree of sanity concerning what I had already experienced through the years concerning the Wadi scrolls. I was aware now that other scrolls were coming forth, and I noticed that no one was being killed for it, so maybe I was safe after all. The Da Vinci Code and other books had paved the road for this kind of spiritual reevaluation, and I knew that I held some galactic codes that would take spiritual seekers on a galactic adventure that would shed some light on their already curious minds about the truth concerning Christianity. I wasn't sure how far I wanted to take this information, but at least I was willing to pick up the scrolls again and make that determination. Get yourself ready to fall off your tricycle for this next revelation. When I mentioned to my friend that I was ready to read the Wadi scrolls, she looked puzzled and said, "What Wadi scrolls?" I refreshed her memory of my visit some years back, and she did remember that I'd been at her house, but she had no memory of any Wadi scrolls being by my bedside. In fact, she remembered nothing about the Wadi scrolls and asked me to tell her about them. I was so stun-gunned that I couldn't speak, and since we hadn't had dinner yet, I encouraged us to go to the restaurant and continue our conversation there. I noticed that through dinner she was showing signs of dementia and that her memory was truly escaping her. But there was something about the way that she'd been erased totally about the Wadi scrolls that had me in a state of bewilderment. Had I missed the opportunity by simply refusing to pick up the scrolls again? Was I so terribly hurt and upset by past actions concerning the scrolls that I was paralyzed with regret to the point of complete denial? What had I done to myself and my commitment concerning the scrolls? I'd missed the window, and now no one but me even had the memory of the history of how George had acquired the scrolls. Doris had sold them. I had turned my back on picking them up again. And now, they were lost to me. Now, I guess I'm getting ready to announce part one on Crack Between the Worlds for the exclusive report on Starseed Radio Academy. And I'm confident that many starseed walk-ins, lightworkers, indigos, and crystal beings will be further activated as this story is broadcast and goes viral through the network of the Internet. I trust that those listening to this story will honor the fact that these are my galactic experiences and will pass this on to others that may honor the source as well as the information. And with that, I now close. Until next time, we meet in galactic sacred space for part two of Crack Between the Worlds information as the secrets from the vaults are released with timing to certain codes and certain planetary activations on the planet. Thank you.
Hello? Ariel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay. I was speechless.
How many times have you heard this?
Every time it's like the first time.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I just close my eyes and I can picture it, and I picture it exactly the same every time. And the funny thing, though, is that last Tuesday, I listened, and I had a reaction in different places. And today, I listened, and I had reaction in other places. You know, I mean, just from, you know, a welling of emotion and feeling like I was going to cry, and then, you know, the just disorientation. And sometimes it happens in one place, and then the next time it'll happen somewhere else. So I don't know if it's a series or a cadence of some kind that maybe other people are having the same experience. But, I mean, I can just barely imagine what it was like for you. And when you consider it was, you know, late 70s when this happened, like 77?
Yeah, 77. I think the thing that became the hardest for me to deal with was my relationships with other people because of this material. And how I had to keep it secret and how I couldn't talk about it. That was, you know, I got three planets in Sag. My mouth's like a torn pocket usually. So it's like, you know, I'm ready to, you know, spill the beans. That's my basic personality. So you can imagine how hard this was for three planets in Sag.
Well, it's a good thing you've got your other placements to draw on. So, we do have some people with questions, and I know the lines are pretty full today, so I do want to remind you that if you do have a comment or question, you have to hit 1 on your keypad so that we know that you have something that you would like to say. And also, please be mindful of the, you know, brevity, so other people will get a chance as well. And I think before we answer, starting getting into answering the calls, we have a little game that we came up with that you might enjoy. On our site, we have many codes, and we've decided to Lavendar is going to do a free starseed confirmation for the first person that will call our toll-free number, which is 888-881-0881. And you can wait until after the show because it will be time-coded. If you go on the site, and somewhere on the site, in pretty easy to find, the answer to this question will be told: how many kinds of energy are there? So if you can go on our site and find the answer to that question, then call our toll-free number. And the first one that does that, you know, give your name, your birth date, time, and place, and you'll get a free starseed confirmation. And I'll give the question again. Go on the site somewhere on one of the main pages, the answer to this question: how many kinds of energy are there? So, what do you think of that? We're going to go on to our callers here. First one to put their hand up is from area 214. 214, it's 214-324. Because we have more than one person from that area. You're on the air. Do you have a question, comment for Lavendar? Hello.
Yes, my name is Jerry Campbell, and I'm a friend of Lavendar's. And I just wanted to thank her for sharing this story. It's an incredible story, and she really means a lot to a lot of people, and she's a shining light to me. And I just wanted to thank her and let her know that.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and thank you, because you were with me in Cairo, Egypt, holding the point for 2 days inside the pyramid, and you were also with me in Yucatan. And at some point, when I get to the Yucatan story, I hope that you come on the show with us and talk about your experiences that we had in Yucatan. So thank you so much for calling today.
Thank you, Lavender.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to move on. We have another caller from the 760 area, 760-705. You're on the air. Hello. 760-705 area. You have something to say or ask?
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Lavendar?
I'm not sure what my number is calling in.
Well, are you just wanting to listen, or do you have a question?
This is Astrea calling.
Oh, hello, hello. I'm so
hi,
glad that you made it.
Hello, yes. I'm really glad too. Lavendar and Aries are very special to my heart, close to my heart. And I want to say thank you as well. I don't know my own number calling in because I'm calling in over the internet, so I apologize for the delay there.
Oh.
I think it's just a random number that's generated.
Okay, I understand that. So, well, we're so glad to have you call in because I know that you're very much tied to Lavendar's information, and we've been communicating for some time. Do you actually have a question or comment or something that you'd like to share with the other listeners?
I do want to just share the acceleration of space and time clearing that's happening right now across North America. Most recently, the stories that Lavendar shares are very close to my heart because it's the forces that work behind the scenes and the guides that lead us to where we need to be are very sacred and divine, and I have the utmost respect for those powers because without them I would not be here speaking today, nor would I have been on the journey that I just most recently returned from in Joshua Tree, which happens to be very, very close to Giant Rock. I didn't realize the significance of it until I heard this story. There's a lot of... I am a goddess incarnate. I incarnate many goddesses here to ground the goddess energy on this earth and to bring back the joining of empathy and will together with divine source. I'm a space clearer and a vortex clearer. So for me to just by chance end up being invited to a yoga festival called Bhakti Fest in Joshua Tree, all the stages of my development and my evolution since I walked in on May 17th have been just in time to be able to do the next task at hand. There's been many key people and angels in the background helping me, as well as my star family and the ships that are constantly monitoring me, that are close to me. What I was able to do in that area, just to kind of share the light that's being brought down right now, was to heal the vortex that's there. It's a very sacred site. I wasn't aware of how sacred it is until I went and did the research afterwards, but I could feel it when I was there, and it manifested into my chakra system, and suffice to say, the shamanic energy there from the indigenous people that held that portal open for so many thousands of years has now been grounded again. It's no longer a creepy, weird place like it was. And I believe I've been prompted now next to move the healing of the vortexes down to the Yucatan Peninsula, which I was able, fortunately, to spend some time living there a couple years ago, which, of course, again, is no coincidence. I have that energy coded within me, as well as I was prompted to heal the vortexes for every single sacred site all over North America and Canada as of, like, yesterday. the North American people and their power and their empathy and will grounded together, God and Goddess connected to Source, is crumbled by the divine power of forgiveness, which is so key. Just love always finds a way. And I just wanted to share that experience. It's been quite a ride coming here to the planet. And thank you so much for your time and support and for existing. It's wonderful to come home to a family and not feel isolated. You can feel isolated sometimes, having to jump between so many dimensions all the time. But I'm firmly ensconced in my body still, of course, has to remain in third and fourth, but I have ascended into seventh now and manifesting amazing things and setting up my life as a healer. So for all those star seeds and walk-ins that are out there, that if you ever feel like there's nobody going through what you're going through, I have experienced it, and I feel you. And
thank you.
That's all the time I think I should take today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I did talk to her by phone yesterday, and her birthday was December 18th, and that's, of course, the sun is 26 Sag, and you've heard me talk about Galactic Center. And then her walk-in date was last May, on May 17th. So that just, it just confirmed how I've been tracking this discovery of star markings in people. So thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Astrea.
You're welcome.
Looking forward to talking to you again. Okay, do we have any other people with questions? Some of them have their hands up, and they're now either dropped off the line, because I know the lines are really full. If you do have something you would like to make a comment or a question, you have to press 1 on your keypad so that we know you have something to say. Well, Lavender, do you want to talk a little bit about the current configuration astronomically? Again, you mentioned something in the beginning of the show. Can you expound on that? You had said that Jupiter is conjunct Uranus.
Yes, this is a combination of planetary energies that seems to be an upliftment. People that are depressed or lethargic, it's an energy that hits the planet, hits everyone. And depending, on your own planetary configuration with Jupiter Uranus, would depend, how this would manifest, in your life or how you would notice it. It would be a really good time for a lot of people that are gamblers that, would use this time for, speculation of any kind.
Like if it happens to be conjunct in your fifth house.
Your fifth house.
Or your eighth house.
Yeah.
Or even your second house. I wonder if this is a problem with the system. We had a question from a caller who has now disappeared. Oh, back again. Okay, good. Let's get it now while we can. Hi, this is Ariel. It's Area 717. You're on the air.
I made it. Okay. Yes, I'm here. You're there?
I'm here.
Oh, thank heaven. I wanted to thank you guys. I called before May 15th last year, and I had a really wonderful time outside during the Pleiadian lineup.
Oh, good.
And also, you did my solar return for me, and what an awesome day.
Good.
Thank you. And I have one other small question. And this, when you said manuscript, I have been, when I was a teenager, I was babysitting, and the husband gave me a book to read, and I can't find it anywhere. He loaned it to me, and I gave it back to him. Saragossa manuscript, that doesn't mean anything to you, does it?
What was the name again? Say that again.
Saragossa manuscript.
No, I'm not okay. Familiar with it.
Okay, I just have to keep searching. When you said manuscript, it just you got my mind going. But I'll keep looking for it.
What was it? What do you remember about it?
I don't remember anything about it except it really struck me. I mean, it really stayed with me, you know, that I should read it again now that I'm different, you know. But, it's S-A-R-R-A-G-O-S-S-A, Saragossa, or G-O-S-A, Saragossa.
Okay, just so that we have it on the, it'll be archived with this radio show, so when people listen to it, if anyone knows anything about the Saragossa manuscript,
they could
send us an email, and we'll put it up on the site for you.
Okay, I'll keep it. I'm looking for the energy and question, too, but I'm having a little trouble. Okay, dears, I'll let you go.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Anyone else have a question? If you put your hand up, I'll try to get to it right away. You just press number 1 on the keypad, and I will try to pick it up right away. It looks like they're having trouble sticking. Okay, press 1. Okay, we have area 240-482. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey, hi, thanks. This is Jim in Rockville, Maryland.
Hello, Jim.
I just wanted to thank Lavendar for telling that story. I think we ought to have, you guys ought to arrange, we all go out to the, what's the building he built out there? Van Tassel's place?
The Integratron.
Thank you. The Integratron, and have like a camp out and go through, have a great night. But, it's really important that this comes out, and I just wanted to thank her for doing that. And it's very excellent.
Well, thank you, Jim. Jim
it's
is
a, yeah.
Jim does film. He's a movie producer, and he has a project called Revolution that is an IMAX film that's going to be really something when it's finally, you know, put in the can. So, Jim, thank you so much for calling today.
Yeah, my pleasure. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Okay. Any other comments or questions for Lavendar? While we are waiting to see if the system will catch up with the calls, just press 1 on your keypad so that we know you have something to say. In the meantime, I'm going to reiterate here, if you would like to have a free Starseed confirmation, be the first one to call 888-881-0881 with the answer to this question, which can be found on our website. How many kinds of energy are there? So when the show's over, you can go on the website, look for the answer, be the first one to call, leave your birth information along with the correct answer to the question, and you'll get a free Starseed reading. Okay. Looks like we don't have any more questions coming up at the moment, Lavendar. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? We have a little bit of time left.
If Jim is still on the line, if he would come back on, I'd. Jim, are you still there? Can you hit 1 and come back on?
Yes. I think. Jim, is this you?
Hello? Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, I'm back.
I have to try to remember what your number was.
Okay.
All right.
Jim, if you would tell our listeners a little bit about the movie that you're doing. I think they'd be very interested in knowing how that you're taking motorcycles and putting it with new technologies on the planet, environmental and energy devices.
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, this is kind of my zen in the art of motorcycle maintenance taken to the big screen, brought up 35 years in time or so. Kind of motorcycling in consciousness, but really talking about, on one side you've got the eye candy, the great visuals of motorcycling, from dirt bikes to traveling, adventure riding around the world. And on a deeper level, the film talks about really how we've gone from Newton's laws and an understanding of our world based on force, mass, acceleration, that sort of thing, inertia, to actually redefining our reality, our ground rules, and that is pretty much with quantum physics, the Copenhagen interpretation, which is so completely different. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners are familiar with, you know, laws of attraction, what the bleep, and I mean, it's a world where our thoughts, as well as our physical actions, actually affect the physical world. And I don't think a lot of people, certainly mainstream, the mainstream world, certainly America, understands this. I mean, this isn't what's taught in schools. It might be something in passing, but the implications for technology, for how we do things, for cleaning up the environment, addressing all of our challenges, are stunning. I mean, it's phenomenal. So the vision here is to get this film out in a way that people can understand. I mean, it's easy. We've got scientists in there. We've got great writers, kind of some living luminaries, and I say high rollers and weekend warriors. And that's kind of the basic gist. Yeah, we'll have a number of technologies showing, but I think the real revolution is not the technology. The revolution has to take place in the mind. It has to be, we need a revolution in thinking, and from there, everyone's got the power to make a difference, make a change, and move us anywhere, you know, move the world anywhere they want. That's my 2 minutes.
Right. Well, you know, I heard something the other day that that there's what, about 7 million motorcycle riders that are, is that the figure, is that figure correct?
I think it's more like 9 million here. That doesn't count the world outside of the country, but it also isn't counting the fans and the people that are just interested in motorcycling, you know, or it could be husbands or wives or something, or families. So it's a pretty big number.
I noticed on the front of your package that it says it's not about the sound, it's about the silence. And
right.
Really,
it's not about the noise, it's about the silence. And that's true. When you're on a motorcycle, it's a good point. People go, what's the connection? It's you get into the zone. I mean, you could do that in a lot of things, sports. It's actually what channeling is about. And when you're in that zone, whether you're racing, you're out on the bike in a beautiful country ride, the cognitive, they've shown this scientifically, the cognitive mind kind of shuts down and we begin accessing and processing information a different way. It's kind of how we tap into that unified field, that energy field, get our nourishment, and find, you know, if we don't know, it's where you can tap into your purpose and help get answers for what you're doing in your life and actually feel great. I mean, that's kind of get that bliss back. So, yeah, that's the connection there.
Okay, good. Well, I
is that pretty good?
After you hung up, I thought, oh, I should have had you say something about the movie, so I wanted you to come back on and talk about it.
Oh, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay, Levender, someone had asked on the last show, and I would like to ask it again, about have you seen this being from under the rock again in your lifetime since 77?
No, I haven't. But his face would come to me, you know, like at different times. But to actually have the physical encounter, no, I have not.
Well, I guess once the physical took place, then he could just...
You know, I've often wondered, you know, when he walked straight through me, if he didn't leave some portion of his being in my body. I've often wondered about that.
Well, that'd be the perfect way to keep you connected and aligned and on it.
Yeah, on it. Keeping me on it. What's a job. Considering how many times I quit.
Well, like I said, you thought you quit, and they just gave you some time. It's like, you know, and then it's like, are you ready now? Pick yourself up. Let's get back on the horse. You know, like
right.
When I remember I'd be little and I'd go in my room and close the door, and they'd just wait for me to come out. It's like, okay, are you ready to do your chores now? It's like, oh, okay.
That's kind of the way. Right.
Kind of like that, yeah.
You know, I've had several emails asking me, you know, what the information was in the scrolls. And when I read The Expected One by Kathleen McGowan and the Book of Love that she wrote, in those two books is a great deal of the information that I read in those scrolls. So, you know, I was very relieved to find that it found another venue to come through the information that I had read. It's, you know, now written as fiction, of course. And Kathleen McGowan, of course, took her 20 years to write it. And her life was threatened, you know, about a year ago or so, and she had to move her family. So it was it's a very heavy responsibility when you carry this kind of information and to have the safeguards in place because there's so many crazies out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just wanted to mention that, you know, if people want to get those two books and well, actually there's three. There's The Poet's Prince. That's the third one. But it's like if you know how to read between the lines when you read something, and you go, aha, that's true for me. And that's what will happen when you read this material. And I've had so many people order their star charts, and I'd find these markings, you know, in their charts that have to do with Jesus' bloodline and some of these experiments, you know, that come from that period of time. And like I said before, I guess this is Discovery of Star Markings Part 2, you know.
Right. Well, because you see patterns like over the course of what, a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or a month, when everyone that calls and makes an appointment for a reading or star confirmation, that they will have similar configurations, and it's almost like there's a interconnectedness when they all call within a short time of each other, and they don't know each other.
That's right.
And you'll see
it all started out of Ohio, and then it kind of went to Colorado, and then Florida, and then over to Texas. And it's just, well, they're just, you know, calling now from, I had several phone calls from Europe, from Scotland, one from Australia. I mean, it's just starting to really go global now. And so I'm very excited about, you know, how the information is coming together from all over the globe, people that are going on our website or ordering charts or listening and getting activated and, you know, wanting to know more. It's very heartwarming, and it's very exciting for me to be able to track it at this level.
And what we're trying to do is, I mean, people who are already activated, have been activated without direction and are waiting for a signal, sometimes those things will happen, and people say, I don't know why, but I'm just, you know, I was led to your site, I was drawn to your site. And the information that we have there is meant, I mean, it's all based on your work, your journals, the things that you have learned and that they, the ETs, have downloaded to you to transmit to the public at the proper time. That it's about training yourself. Some, you know, the activation happens, and we're trying to give the tools that you have collected all through your 25 or 30 years and just have them there for people to put together the pieces on their own and go out on their own, because it's ultimately these beings that are starseed now have the qualifications to do this great work. Otherwise, they would not have been given permission to come here and be part of it. So always have confidence and faith in that. If you do have the star markings, then you also have the rites of passage to be here.
That's true.
And that's how you that's how you do your readings then.
And the two things I really look for in the chart, first is the natural state, what you're born with. What is your natural state? Things that are easy for you, things that come to you easy. And then I look for the rites of passage. And then it's about navigating your own soul to be at the right place at the right time, to meet the people that need to come into your life. You know, I find that when people's karmic files start opening up, that they'll start magnetizing people from other lifetimes to continue the work. And I'm finding that there is a soul group that has formed on the planet, and they're slowly starting to find one another, and it has to do with this bloodline experiment of Jesus the Christ and Christianity, and, you know, how that was all put forth on the planet. So, you know, for all those years that I sat, you know, holding the Wadi Scroll secrets, I had no idea that, you know, 30 years later, that there would be, you know, a continuation, but it'd be in a whole different venue. I just never, you know, I never dreamed that it would come through like it's coming through now.
Well, didn't you tell me that the formula is that 1,000 people are given something?
Well, no, I don't.
What is the formula?
That formula really has to do with genius on the planet. There's a formula. They send it to 1,000, 100 pick it up, 10 run with it, but one gets to do it.
Okay,
that's
what I was looking
at.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you find the great inventions or the great masterpiece artworks or whatever, music, whatever it is, you know, it's sent to the basic formula, it's sent to 1,000, 100. You know, pick it up. 10 will run with it, but one gets to do it. That's basically it.
I always thought that was interesting. I think we have another caller with a question. If I'm not mistaken, this is from the same area that Jim was calling, so I'm hoping that I pick the right one. Area 240669. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I have a question. You mentioned about this book. What is the name of it, and who is the author? I'm curious about it. I never heard of it, I guess.
It's called The Expected One by Kathleen McGowan. And the second book
one.
She wrote was The Book of Love, and the third book is called The Poet's Prince.
Book of Love.
Uh-huh. By Kathleen McGowan, The Expected One.
McGowan. Okay. Thank you.
And I found you know, all the books here in my library, and they're, you know, they're everywhere. You can get them at bookstores, and so I, you know, people that are interested in finding out more about her stories that she wrote.
What is the subject of her stories?
Mary Magdalene is her main character.
I see. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Thank
All right.
You.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Anybody else with a question or comment for Lavendar, just press 1 on your keypad. And I don't see any other questions coming in. So we have a lot of callers listening. Apparently they have all their questions have been answered. What a wonderful thing.
Well, I'm just really honored to be able to do this show twice. We did it on Tuesday and again on Saturday because I knew that a lot of people weren't able to hear it on Tuesday, and trying to get the second wave of Starseed that, you know, have been keeping up with some of our shows, so that's why we did it this way. And I really don't know right now what our topic's going to be for the next show. I've got several things that I'd like to bring out of the vault. So just stay tuned, and I will send you, you know, an announcement when we're going to have another show.
If you're on our forum and we have your email address, we can send you announcements. If you're not on our support forum, which would be starseedhotline.ning, N-I-N-G.com, you can go there and register for free, or you can register for free right here on blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. Click the little red heart or the word follow, and the Blog Talk Radio will email you when we have an upcoming show. For the most part, we're kind of trying to stick to Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we've had more shows on Tuesday. We're trying to get the schedule to happen with the rhythm there. And also, you can go to our main website, which is starseedhotline.com. The toll-free number is 888-881-0881. And for the first time, we're kind of playing a little game here with the winner gets a free starseed confirmation from Lavendar. If you can go on our site and find the answer to this question, how many kinds of energy are there? Be the first one to call 888-881-0881 with the correct answer. Leave your birth information, which would be the day, the year, the time, and the place. Okay, and we have another question coming in now, so let's get to area 503-662. You're on the air. You have a question for Lavendar.
Hi, Lavendar, Ariel. It's Monique. I just wanted to say thank you. Thanks for doing the show again and for your support this week.
Thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome, sweetie. You're so welcome.
Wasn't obviously able to listen Tuesday.
Monique, you have such a devotion to horses, and I understand that you lost your stallion, and we really, hold you in the highest regard with the work that you did with your stallion. And I realize that a lot of people, listening don't probably know that there are galactic horses on the planet. There are beings that have chosen to come down and live inside of horses. And Monique, you have been taking care of these horses, and I just want to acknowledge that to the audience.
Thank you. I appreciate all you guys' support.
Yeah, thank you.
I know it's difficult as a horse owner myself, and I'm sure, you know that the physical is all that's been taken. The spirit is stronger than ever, and he can be with you all the time now. And he could even go to the grocery store with you and places where he could never go when he was in the physical body. So, but what a noble spirit.
Oh, he was. He absolutely, and he still is. He's touched a lot of people, and he's really bringing everybody back together again, so... It's good. So
well,
I appreciate having had him for 5 years and being honored with him.
If you don't mind giving your website, people can go on and look at this great horse. If you don't mind giving your website.
Actually, if they want to go to the Facebook page, it's Champs Guthrie, or just Champs Guthrie, just Google it. And there's tons of pictures of him and all of his foals on there.
Okay.
Because actually my... website doesn't, it only has one daughter on there right now. So.
Okay, so that would be Champs, like Champions?
Yep.
And Guthrie, like Arlo Guthrie? Champs Guthrie?
Yes.
For the spellings, anyway.
Right.
Champs Guthrie, and he's on Facebook. He has his own page now on Facebook.
Right, and you can see all of his kids.
So you can go and see what galactic horses look like. There's a look in the eye, and when you see that pattern, then you'll know it again when you see it.
Yeah, no, you mentioned that. I was looking at all of their eyes just now as we were talking. I should post those up as well. I didn't think about that. And my website is listed in the favorites column on there, too. So, if anybody wanted to chat with me about them, they can connect that way as well on his page. So, but again, thank you guys for doing this again, because I was not able to listen on Tuesday.
Okay, thank you.
Just know that our arms are around you in honoring Champs Guthrie.
All right, thank you. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, maybe we should do a show on animals, because Ariel, you and I have lots of high strangeness that have been happening with horses and cats and dogs and remember Razzie, that galactic horse that had that weird eye?
He's still around.
Yeah, it's real difficult to deal with him.
He was still around. This horse had, well, when you saw him when he was a baby, you said his problem is that he sees everything.
Yeah.
And it drove, he couldn't handle it. I mean, he came down here like full-blown wide open, and he could not handle seeing everything in all dimensions at one time, and Lord help anybody that tried to ride him. But he's much better now that he's older. He's figured out how to handle it.
That's good. That's good.
But, yeah, I think that would be good because there are probably a lot of people who are stewards and caretakers for galactic beings in animal suits and maybe some training on how to recognize them.
Well,
honor
what
them.
Actually, another procedure that they use is they actually take technology and place it inside the animal, and the ETs function from there through the animals. So
you can get information and guidance and support from your galactic pet.
That's right. That's right.
As both of us have done. And
I'm certainly going to be watching my Callie after she leaped three times across the street to the and through the lawn. I mean, it's like, okay, that was a real signal about something.
Uh-huh. Wow. Do we have any more questions before I sign off? I do want you to just mention really quickly about the technology that you're looking at, have used for Starseed. Would you like to talk about that, or are you saving it?
Yeah, I anyone that's interested about this device, send me an email at lavendar@starseedhotline.com. Or call in to the telephone number on our webpage if you're interested. And I'll send you a 60-page report that was done over 5 years about this technology. And what it does is you lay down on this pad for 8 minutes in the morning, 8 minutes at night, and it totally restructures your cellular beingness. The blood, it takes care of electromagnetics. You know, we have so many cell phone towers and cell phones that have just bombarded our systems, and they're, you know, making us sick on the planet. And it really clears all those things up, and I've seen, you know, miraculous healings take place. But the thing that impressed me the most was how that if you happen to get some negative implants, that it just completely dislodges them and takes care of them. And then you can get to your natural state and your rites of passage, and you can get on with your work. And there's so many light workers, starseed on the planet, that have been implanted by other entities, and they can't get to their records. They can't find out what they're here to do because there's other technologies that's blocking that. And this, I found that this device does disengage them. Pretty
remove
exciting. I've been looking for something like this for a very long time. So if you're interested in this information, please email me and I'll send you the 60-page report. I'll also send you my testimony on what I experienced with it. So, yeah, I'm very excited about knowing that these kind of technologies are here. And, you know, the Integraton, when George, you know, built it, he built it so that people could walk in and walk out and all their cells would be changed in their body. And this technology, very close to the Integraton. I can put it right up there and say, you know, this is part of the technology that he was building, you know, back in the early 60s, late 50s, 60s when he was shown by ETs how to bring the rejuvenation formulas to the people and the planet. And we have lots of Tesla kids now all over the planet, you know, that have these energy devices, alternative energy devices, environmental healing devices. I'm so excited to have some of them. And just recently, a client of mine sent me a zero-point pendant, and I received it and was actually wearing it the first day when I read on Tuesday, Crack Between the Worlds, and I've had it on ever since. And I can attest to the zero-point energy that I'm wearing with this pendant. It's helping me with clarity. You know, I've been hit three times by lightning, so I'm always having to try different things because one day one thing may work and the next day it won't. You know, I've tried everything from Jack Daniels to crystals. You've heard me say that before. But this pendant has just really kept me steady all week. So I will contact the lady that that sent me this, and I think that we should probably, you know, have this available on our website, Ariel.
Absolutely. And also, just want to remind, I have this information on the website, but I think it's important enough to emphasize it every few shows or so, the very, very high importance of having enough silica in your body, and it is absolutely critical to, because of the electromagnetic interference from the cell phone towers, the microwaves, the televisions, the computers, all this electrical interference not only blocks signals, but it sucks your energy and your life force down. And you need to have your silica not only to offset that electromagnetic pollution, but to stay in contact and connection with your own personal high command. If you don't have the silica, you do not, they can't reach you.
It's because, you know, it's like we're radios and radio receivers. And, you know, quartz crystal, of course, is in telephones and computers. And, you know, when you think about it, it is the common denominator for, you know, sending signals, information, harmonics, frequencies. So if your silica is burned out in your body, you know, you can walk around with Ga a lot because
right.
You just simply
and I've had people
can't get there from here. And also, the proper silica balance helps the calcium in your bones. You know, the calcium and silica work together. And I've been researching a product a client of mine sent me to look at, and I'll probably be trying this product out within a week or so, and I'll let everyone know about this product because I'm always interested in silica products. Right now,
I
take additional silica homeopathic, the little, you know, tablets under the tongue, and then I have a bottle of it called quartz crystal gel that I get at the health food store. But I'll be trying this other product soon, so I'll let everyone know.
So, I mean, I've had people ask me, well, how do I know if my silica is depleted? It's like, well, unless you live in the desert away from cell phones, you don't have a cell phone or a computer, you can pretty much bet that your silica is depleted. So if you're going to, you have to live, especially if you live in the city, please, please, please make sure that you supplement your silica level. Besides the ET communication thing, and your bone health, it supports your connective tissue and can have an anti-aging effect. So,
and you know what? You can just eat
that's enough all by itself.
And strawberries and watermelon. I mean, it's like
right. But how much? I mean, how many strawberries can you eat? Because the soil is depleted.
No.
So you are getting some in strawberries. You are getting some in watermelon. You are getting some in oatmeal, and oh, geez, I had the whole list memorized there for a while of all the food sources for silica, but there's such a need for it that I don't think you could probably eat that much. So there you go, boys and girls. Take your silica. Get yourself protection for your cell phone. The best thing that we found is on our website for cell phone protection, so go check it out. And stay tuned. We will be back on Tuesday with the topic to be announced. And, well, it looks like we have one more person that has a question every time we try to say goodbye to someone else's one. But we do have a few minutes left, so let's go for it. Okay. From area 702, area 702-379, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Lavendar?
Hi, it's Georgia. I just want you to know that I look forward every week to these programs to listen because they are so informative, and it just reaffirms who I am and makes me feel at home.
Oh,
thank you so much. And Georgia, you're such a wonderful artist, and you have sent me some beautiful pictures of your paintings. And give your website so people can look at the wonderful work you do. Speak slowly and spell it out so that they'll be able to write it down. Give your website.
Okay. I'll say it first so because it'll be easier to write. It's Symphonza's Art Studio. That's www.symphonzas. artstudio.com.
Okay, good. Good. And we were talking the other day, Georgia, about maybe you doing some commission work for some people that have star markings in their charts, and we're trying to figure out now how that would work, but I can definitely see that you could put a tapestry together of a soul blueprint of someone that has all these starseed markings and probably really come up with some very exciting paintings. So I'm really looking forward to pursuing this idea.
I am too. And one of my paintings that's on my website called Messenger from the Stars is sort of on that order to myself. I didn't know why I had to paint that, just that I did. And I started out with knowing just the, hello?
Yeah.
Yes, you're here.
Okay, I just started with the bird, and then as I painted, all the rest of the ideas came through. So it wasn't like I had the whole picture. I started and everything started channeling through as I was working on it. So it's a starseed painting for myself, but it will relate to a lot of people because there's a lot of hidden codes and messages in it.
Wonderful.
You know, in the books, The Expected One and The Book of Love and Poet's Prince, all throughout those three books, there are paintings with coded messages that she talks about throughout, you know, her entire story.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to do with the codes from Mary Magdalene and from Jesus. So the great masters did paint them and leave them for generations to find. So I really feel like that our generation now should do paintings for the star children and the people that are coming so that they'll know what happened here and how they can also go to their next level of evolution with these starseed codes. So I think that you're onto something, Georgia. You're really onto something.
Well, I certainly hope so because I'm just loaded with ideas and I usually run with them and I leave everybody in the dust. I want to bring up something that you mentioned during the beginning of the show, and I remember I listened to the show on Tuesday, but I fell asleep, at least I thought I did, but I had missing time, and when you brought up people had missing time, I realized that's what was going on because I was like in a trance-like state.
Yeah, I had several people to say that happened to them. Yeah. Yeah. Normal, I guess. When I say normal, if you're a starseed and you're in the activation process, then, you know, missing time or your DNA, your codes will start going off and you'll just have different experiences. So, yeah, I think that is normal for us.
Right. It certainly is. We've had enough people say that they experienced either missing time or just, you know, kind of a few minutes of zombiness or being in some other dimension
And I had several people who talk about how they just couldn't stop crying.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And I do like your idea of animals because I am so in tune with my cat that when I took my cat in off the street, I tried to give him away, and then I was told by two psychics that I was not to have a separation from him, not to give him up, that we could not be separated anymore. So I realize that he is a very active part of my starseed abilities because
he's probably got a crystal implant with a being that's coming and helping you. And, you know, when I found this little kitty, this little bitty yellow kitty that has this huge adult voice, I thought, you know, I think I'll name this kitty George if it's a boy, and I'll call it Georgia if it's a girl. And sure enough, it's a girl. So today I named her Georgia, and I thought of you.
Oh, how wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's great. Yeah. Animals are so full of love.
Yes,
people don't even realize how much they are here on this earth to teach love in every aspect of the word.
And, you know, the cats, they hold a special DNA for interdimensional communication. I've seen my cats on several occasions. They'll be sitting with three or four of them, and their heads will turn simultaneously together, watching something that none of us can see in the room. And they just automatically, it's their natural state. But can you imagine taking their natural state and upping it by putting crystal technology in their little heads so that they are monitoring devices or healing devices or, you know, inspirational kitties that, you know, have interlocked with some high spiritual beings that have chosen to come and work through the animals for short periods of time. And I think it's going to be important maybe to bring some of those stories to light in some of our future shows, talking about the animals, you know.
And also, what happens with the animals during the ascension process, too, I think a lot of us have questions about.
A lot of animals choose to go in an evolutionary path of more conscious awareness, and they will, shapeshift into other species and back again. And sometimes animals will find you from past lives, you know, animals that you've had before.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of on a quest also.
Okay.
Well, we need to wrap this up, ladies.
Okay.
Okay.
And
thank you very much
for calling in, and we will have you on the animal show to talk more on this subject because I've seen your art. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
But we're gonna say good evening, and thank you so much for calling in, Georgia.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lavendar, thank you so much for sharing your time, your stories, and your information and insights with us. We will be back on Tuesday.
Okay.
With a subject to be announced. We'll have a email going out announcing the topic. You can also check back on blogtalkradio.com / Starseed Radio Academy.
Okay, thank you.
Until next week, tell your friends, and we'll see you then.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.